cryptography. And before I start, I would like to thank the organizer for the opportunity to give this talk. I'm from University of Cincinnati, but right now I'm visiting Technical University of Darmstadt with Johannes Buchmann. Today, I'm probably going to give a more or less a propaganda talk in some way. So the talk consists of three parts. The first part is a general introduction, and then I will talk about the existing multi-rail public key cryptosystems, and in the end, I present some challenges we're facing at this moment. I'll start with talking about something called post-quantum cryptography. And this notion was coined by Dan, is that right? Yep. And in June 2006, in Belgium, there was a very successful international workshop on post-quantum cryptography. Basically, what we're trying to do is to prepare us for the future quantum computer, if there's any. And this workshop is about public key cryptosystems that potentially could resist the future quantum computer attacks. At this stage, there are mainly four families of such cryptosystems. We call them code-based, hash-based, lattice-based, and the last one is multivariate. I believe on Tuesday, Vincenzo gave a talk about lattice-based. And then, of course, yesterday, Johannes gave a talk about hash-based. So today, I'm going to talk about multivariate. Okay? Actually, Diffie in 2000, I believe, in Paris, had a very interesting point of view about multivariate. He was one of the first guy who studied this crypto system. According to his opinion, ISA is a theoretical foundation of number theory, and this is 18th century mathematics. And the ECC and relies on the theory of elliptic curves, of course, and this is the mathematics developed in the 19th century. And what is multivariate public key cryptosystem? And its foundation, actually, we should understand it as algebraic geometry. And this is 20th century mathematics. And of course, what is algebraic geometry? Basically, this is a theory about polynomial rings. Yeah. So what is a multivariate public key cryptosystem? So multivariate public key cryptosystem is a cryptosystem based on multivariate functions over a finite field instead of a single variable function. And in general, the cipher, namely the public key, is given by a set of polynomial functions of a finite field. Here I call G a map, basically, from k to the n to k to the m, and each component of this map is a multivariate polynomial. And in the case of encryption, what do? It's very simple. If you have a message, which is m, and which is the element in k to the n, or you can think of it as a vector of n components from the field F. And then to encrypt, it's very easy. You just evaluate the polynomial. You calculate the value of the set of polynomials at this point, x1 prime all the way to xn prime, and the result gives you another vector, y1 prime to y n prime, and this is our ciphertext. So that's it for encryption. So the encryption basically is just to calculate the value of the polynomial. And then to decrypt, it's quite different. And to decrypt the message, we need to know some hidden structure of the cipher, and namely the secret key. And the secret key varies from different systems. So in a nutshell, the decryption relies on the hidden structure of the public key. There's something hidden there that we can invert. Okay. For the case, of course, you can also define the signature schemes. In this case, to verify, to check whether or not this equation is valid. Namely, if you have a document and you have a signature, and if you have the public key G, to verify whether or not that this is a valid signature, you just plug in this value into your polynomial and then calculate if indeed this polynomial holds. And of course, to sign, one needs to know how to solve this equation or to invert this map. Okay. And here I quickly give a toy example. For example, if I use the finite field K of size 4 with 4 elements, and in this case we denote the 4 elements by this 0, 1, 2, 3 curve, and then, of course, here 0 is just 0, 1 just 1, and 2 represents x, and 3 represents 1 plus x, and you can write down a public key, which is 3 polynomials, quadratic polynomials with 3 variables. For example, if you have the plain text, which is given by x0 equal to 1, x1 equal to 2, and x2 equal to 3, what you do, you just calculate the value. You plug them in and you calculate, and the result is 0, 0, 1. And this map I give here is actually a bijective map, and we can invert it easily. And this example is based on so-called Matsumoto Imai crypto system. Now we're looking a little bit about security. As we now know, this is a public key. G1 to GM, they're public key, therefore it is known. And then suppose I have a ciphertext, and according to our assumption, the ciphertext is known because, for example, if you send a message via the internet, and everybody more or less can read it. So I have the public key, and I have a ciphertext. And the plain text basically is a solution of the equation, which we'll call public equation. So if you can solve the equation, you find the plain text. So namely, if you want to attack system, the first thing probably you should do is to solve this equation. Okay? So if you can solve the equation, you know the secret. So that's it. Unfortunately, we know solving a set of n randomly chosen nonlinear equations with n variables over a finite field is an NP complete problem. Okay? So this is, in some sense, the security foundation. Of course, it does not guarantee everything you write is secure. Yeah, so this is one of the reasons we believe, actually, this system might be able to resist quantum computer attack if the security relies only on this assumption. And by now, all the constructions we have seen, more or less, maybe 99% of them are quadratic constructions. Namely, all the public key polynomials here, they're all quadratic functions. Okay, you ask me why. Why only quadratic? Of course, first, we don't want to use linear. Anybody can solve it. Yeah, so the next choice is quadratic. But on the other hand, there's a consideration of efficiency, because remember, when you encrypt the message, what you do, you calculate the value of your polynomial. So if you have n variables, if you have a high degree polynomial, then you're in trouble, because what? The polynomial size is very large. So evaluate becomes very inefficient. So that's one consideration. And of course, another consideration is the key size. I mean, if you have a n degree n point, if you have n polynomial of degree d with n variables, suppose n is equal to 100 and d is 10, then this is impossible. The key size becomes impossible. So this is the reason why we mainly concentrate on finding quadratic type of multivariate public key crypto systems. Okay, and of course here I'll put a little bit abstract nonsense in some way. So from mathematical consideration, in some sense a high degree doesn't really help you that much, because we know any high degree polynomials can be reduced to what? Quadratic polynomials by introducing more variables. So eventually you can reduce the problem solving quadratic polynomial. The simple example here is this equation x1 times x2 x times x3 equal to 1, and this equation is equivalent to the set of two equations, right? Oh, sorry, it should be x1 times x2 times y equal to, what did I write? Yes. Oh, yes. So this is right. So yeah, y equal to, basically you write y equal to x1 times x2, and then y times x3 equal to 1. And these two set of equations are equivalent. Yeah? So this is a simple mathematics. So from this point of view, you can see that probably we should try a quadratic, if it's possible. So that's why we all our efforts, more or less, all concentrated on in this area. Okay? Of course, again, I want to repeat the what I said earlier. First, we hope, or we wish that this guy maybe able to resist quantum computer attack, but of course we don't know for sure. But by now we have not yet seen how a quantum computer can be used to attack multivariate public equation system efficiently. Okay. Another interesting thing is the potential for practical applications, because you can see we are working on a very small finite field. Okay, and then the computation can be very efficient if you implement them properly. And that's one of the reasons. For example, one of the main considerations we are looking at is to apply it for IFID, for actually passive IFID. This is one of the things we are looking at. So here I just list the names of the system I will talk about, and then a few names here. Maybe I just quickly go over to the next part. So the multivariate power system was started by Diffie Fail in the U.S. and I think Tsuji and some other names, Japanese names, forgive me, I forgot, and Shamir. And at the very beginning, the idea was not very successful, because they built some systems and it's very quickly broken. And the first breakthrough in my opinion, is the multimodal MIMO system. So before I give the details, I want to first fix some notation. So let's again start with a finite field K. Let's assume K is a characteristic 2, and let's assume the size of K is Q. And then let's find a big field I call K bar, which is degree and extension of K. Okay? And one thing from mathematics we know, K bar can be identified as a small k vector space, n-dimensional vector space. And you have a natural map which identifies these two things. Yeah, easily. Or there are many of them, of course. So what is the idea of a multimodal MIMO? What they realize that I could not build a quadratic maps over a small field. But now that these two things are the same, maybe I'll work on what? On a bigger field. Then what? I pull my that map down to the small field. So I call this idea big field idea. Okay, so what did you do? So, okay, this system was proposed in 1988. So they proposed, the main construction is this map. I call the F here. This is a map from K bar to K bar, and Fx is given by x to the q to the theta plus 1. And remember, q here is the size of the field. And theta is some integer, okay, which I'll tell you a little bit about it later. So this is a map from K bar to K bar. Then I can compose what? Phi and the phi inverse on both sides. Which means what I'm doing now is what? So we have a map from K bar to K bar. Now that K bar can be identified as a vector space K to the N, then I can what? I can lift it up or push it down, doesn't matter. And it becomes a map from K to the N to K to the N. In this case, each component becomes a polynomial. Okay? And the polynomial is quadratic. And it's very easy why it's quadratic, because what? If you look at the x to the q to the theta plus 1, it can be written as x to the q to the theta times x. We know x is small k linear, and this guy is also small k linear, right? Because this is the famous one, Frobenius map. Yes? So this is a linear map. So you have linear terms times linear terms, of course, you get a quadratic term. So this is the reason why it is a quadratic map. Okay? And then, of course, you cannot use that as a cipher. This suggestion is very simple. Let's compose two invertible affine linear maps on two ends, which is I call the L1 and L2. Okay? Those are randomly chosen invertible affine maps over K to the N. Okay? So the final cipher, which I call the F bar, is composition of these five maps, L1, phi, F, phi inverse, and L2. Okay? And the purpose of L1 and L2 is to hide the central map. Okay? So this is the idea. And you can see, in some sense, this idea also relates to in some kind of composition of decomposition of maps. Okay? So which means if you know how to decomposition maps, you can break the system. Okay? So this is basic construction. Yeah? And if you ask me how to decrypt, yeah, how this mesh is decrypt. So in order to have the decryption, you have to impose the following condition, which means the GCD of Q to the theta plus 1 with Q to the M minus 1 is equal to 1. This is more or less the same as ISA, because the map X to the Q to the theta plus 1 is just can be viewed as a group automorphism, and then this condition in short is isomorphism, therefore we need this condition. And one thing I would like to emphasize a little bit is that we require this K to be what? Characteristic 2, because this formula only is true if Q is characteristic 2. Otherwise, if Q is odd, you always have what? The GCD cannot be equal to 1. GCD at least is equal to 2. Okay? And how do you invert F? That's very simple, because this condition is satisfied, and then we invert F by calculating X to the T, such that T times Q to the theta plus 1 equal to 1, modulo Q to the M minus 1, and this is more or less the same as the case of ISA. Yeah? So, now, we know we can invert L1 because L1 is linear. We can invert phi, and we can invert F, so this map can be inverted easily. This is a composition map. So I just invert one by one. So the inversion here is what? To decrypt. Okay? With the secret key, I can decrypt. Okay? So this is the idea. Yeah? So encryption is to what? To calculate the values of the multivariate polynomial. And to decrypt, I just inverted each map one by one under the composition. Yeah? So that's it. Okay? So the public key here is given by this set of polynomials, and the secret key more or less just these two linear maps, L1, L2. And to decrypt, we just invert them one by one. As I said, the components of the composition one by one. And the toy example I gave earlier was produced by setting n equal to 3 and theta equal to 2. So this is what I gave earlier. Okay? So this system survived for 7 years. And actually, if I'm correct, I think this system was also supposed to submitted in Japan as one of the candidates for security standards for public key encryption. And unfortunately, in 1995, Patarin in University of Versailles found an attack to break the system. And this attack is called the linearization equation method. And the idea actually is very elegant and but very simple idea. His observation is the following. Suppose x1 to xn is the plain text, and the y1 to yn is the ciphertext. And for any such a pair, they satisfy such an equation, which he called a linearization equation. And this is a quadratic equation of x and y. You only have xy term, a linear term x, linear term y, and plus constant term. And why is this equation useful? You can see, if I have such an equation, if I know the value of the ciphertext, I just plug it in. So this become constant, this become constant. What I derived is actually a linear equation satisfied by the plain text. So if I have enough equations, then I can solve your, I can find the plain text. So that's his observation. Okay? And so this is called a linearization equations. And why multimodal MIMO encryption system has such a linearization equation? Okay? And the simple explanation is given by this simple algebraic formulas. If you consider, let's ignore the L1, L2 first. Just consider the case of the large field. We know this map is given by x to the q to the theta plus 1. Let's set the value to be y. And then what you do, you raise the power on both sides, and you will get the second equation. And then you multiply on both sides by xy. What you get is third equation. Okay? And I don't know why. So this is, the third equation. And I repeated the third equation, I believe. And then what I get is the last equation is this one. Yeah? And if you look at this equation, you realize this equation is linear with respect to x, y, yes? And linear with respect to x here, because this is just Frobenius mapped. So this equation, if you transform over the small fields, they look like this. Yes? And then you should remember what L1, L2 does are just two affine linear transformation on xi and yi. Separately. Therefore, if you consider the effect of the linearization as a L1, L2, you will exactly derive something like this. Okay, those terms coming from the constant terms, the constant shift of the L1, L2, because it's an affine map. Yeah, so that's what his observation is. Okay, so what Patarin showed is there are enough linearization equations to produce a substantial number of linearly independent linear equations satisfied by the plain text for any given ciphertext. Namely, I find a set of linearization equations, then giving me ciphertext, I plug them into the linearization equation, it will produce linear equations. Of course, is it possible all the linear equations are the same, which means the dimension is equal to 1? Then that's not good. But what he showed is, no, that's not the case. We can produce enough linearly independent linear equation satisfied by plain text, if you give me the ciphertext. And let me give you a concrete result. What he showed is the dimension of a linearization for any given ciphertext, except some very special cases, is given more or less by n minus GCD of n and theta. Okay? For example, if GCD of n and theta equal to 1, then the dimension is exactly n minus 1. So you can get n minus 1 linearly independent linear equations satisfied by your plain text. That's it. You can get the plain text. Okay? So that's his main result. And normally, this is the end of the story in some way. But Patarin and his research group actually pushes much further. What happened is that afterwards, there's an explosive development along this line. So in some way, the multimodal MIMO encryption served as a catalyst for the fast recent development of the multivariate public key crypto system. And most of the work, as I said earlier, were done by Patarin's research group. Maybe I should give another two names. It was Patarin, Gobain, and Kotowa. Okay? So one of the first work they did is to generalize or extend this multimodal MIMO system. And the first method is called a minus method. A minus method is a very simple method. So you have a map, yeah, with n components. Minus means what? I just take out a few. I take out R. Okay? So in the multimodal, in my case, what I do is what? Your public key originally has n polynomials. Now I don't give you n. I give you what? N minus R polynomials. I take the last R components out. That's all they did. Okay? And the minus method is used to build signature schemes, not for encryption. Okay? So the public key now becomes this set of polynomials instead of n polynomials. Okay? And to sign, in this case, how do you sign it? Maybe before I say that, And to sign, it's very simple. Because I'm the security holder, I know the missing component. To sign a message, which is given by y1 prime to yn minus I prime, what you do is you add back the missing component. And you invert the map. And that will give you what? A signature. Okay? Namely, this map, f bar minus, is very easy to invert in the sense of finding a pre-image. Okay? You give me any image, I can find one pre-image easily, or find all of them easily. Okay? So this is the basic idea. And this pre-image, of course, is treated as a signature. Okay? So this system has a different name called S-Flash. And S-Flash was actually accepted in last year by the European Security, by this NESI program, and as one of the security standard for low-cost smart cards. Okay? So here maybe I should emphasize this low-cost smart cards. The point is that in the case of Matsumoto Imai system, this inverse, this signing process, is very efficient. Okay, much faster than ISA. Therefore, they can be used for small devices without a co-process. Okay? So that's the point. That's why it was suggested for that use. Of course, as I said earlier, S flash is nothing but Matsumoto Imai minus. Okay, that's it. Okay, so maybe I should give a little bit more description of the S flash. So S flash is a case. In the case of S flash, the signature is 249 bits. Okay, and its efficiency is much better than ISA. So that's the S flash. Yeah. Maybe I should give here. In the case of S flash, the n is equal to 37, and the size of q is 2 to the 7, and the r is equal to 11, which means in the end, the public key has 37 minus 11, which is 26. It has 26 quadratic polynomials with 37 variables. That's the public key size. Okay, so that's the basic design of S-Flash. Okay. Maybe I should mention a little more. S-Flash had two versions, maybe even three. The first version was submitted, but it was there was a defect, but it was not an essential defect. Then they submit S-Flash version 2, which is what I give here. And the S-Flash version 1 was defeated by Henry Gibbet. Okay, so this is about S-Flash. Okay, and then there's a further generation they called plus method. Okay, and you can see earlier the minus can only be used for signature because the map is not invertible anymore. Okay, and they say, okay, this is a map not invertible, then by adding more components, I could possibly make it what? Invertible. So their suggestion is, maybe you can do something called a minus plus, which means you take out a few and add a few. But in this case, the efficiency is a little bit going down because in order to decrypt, you need to do some search. Now, there's a search process in the missing component. So this is their minus plus method. I forgot. The minus method, in some way, was publicized, the first ones, by Shamir. Actually, it was suggested by Shamir. I should mention that. But also, I think Matsumoto also had a claim that he knew it before. So this is about minus method. Okay? And probably by now the most well-known work is something called HFE. HFE stands for hidden field equation. Okay? So the idea of Pataran is very simple. Okay, this map fx equal to x to the q to the theta plus 1 doesn't work. Is it possible I can replace it by something else? Yeah? Okay? And he come up with this idea. Namely, I replace by that monomial, a single term, by the following term, which means fx is written as a summation of aij x to the q to the I plus q to the j, but over d, okay? Aij over d, and then assimilate over there, okay? So that's his suggestion. And this is a simplified version in some way, okay? And so that's it. That's his suggestion. I replace the previous invertible map by this randomly, this coefficient are randomly chosen polynomials. Okay? Here I would emphasize again, you should look at the term x to the q to the I plus q to the j ensures that the map will be quadratic. Yeah? And the decryption becomes very different. Yeah? So to decrypt, basically I have to invert f. How do you invert f? His suggestion is very simple. Let's use the Bellacamp algorithm, which means the algorithm to solve polynomial equations. And this implies very clearly this d cannot be too big, because we know the Bellacamp algorithm depends on the degree d, the square of the degree d. If your degree d is very high, it's impossible to invert it yourself. Therefore, what? You cannot even decrypt it. So this d should be what? It requires d to be small. Yeah? But unfortunately, due to the work of Kipnis, Shamir, Courtois, Fourier, Anton Zhu, etc., they showed that d cannot be too small. Namely, if d is small, the system is rather weak. I would like to emphasize a little bit, but the first three guys using a completely different method from the people behind. And Kipnis, Shamir, Courtois, more or less, their attack, more or less explore the fact that this map, they somehow lift the thing back to the bigger field, they attack from the point of a bigger field. And because it's d small, somehow they can find the private key. That's the claim, at least. Okay. However, what Fourier and Anton did is something totally different. And this is something Gola mentioned earlier. Their attack used something called a global basis, and which is and actually the new global basis, not the old one, called F4 and F5 divided by Fourier. They found out that if d is small, you can just put your you can set the public equation into the fit into the global basis. You will just solve it quickly. Okay. In particular, I would like to mention that Fourier defeated one of the challenges Patalam put, and that was actually come as a very much a surprise. And I would like to emphasize a little bit that by now we still do not understand why global basis should break it. Okay. So what we know is if you feed the equation into the software, it will solve it for you. But from mathematical point of view, or at least according to my understanding, we're still far from understanding what is going on. And in crypto this year, there was another work done by Stern, Zhu, and Grand Boulin, and they said something very interesting. They showed that asymptotically, to invert a map is quasi polynomial. So this is in some sense more or less killed HFE. Okay? And then there's another generation I would like to mention a little bit quickly related to what I just mentioned earlier, the global basis. So Patalan, Kipnis, Courtois, and Shamir, they further generalized the linearization equation method. What they proposed a new method called XL. XL basically stands for extended linearization equation. So the idea can be explained very easily. Namely, what they try to do is if you have a set of equations and you just try to generate the ideal generated by those polynomials, and then you try to find single variable polynomial equations and try to solve it. And there's a lot of work done in this area, which probably I mentioned at the end. Okay, so this is what they showed. And then I want to mention another work done by Patalan again. This is what I call the linearization equation inspiration. Okay, and if you observe the linearization earlier, linearization equation looks like quadratic. Yeah. But this map, if you can guess the value of certain variables, you can solve this equation easily. So once Patalan realized that, he changed it in an attack method into a method of designing signature schemes, which he called the oil vinegar system. Okay. So what is the oil vinegar system? The oil vinegar system depends on something called oil vinegar polynomials. Okay. So what do? You first set up two sets of different variables. The first set called x1 to xo, which I called oil variables, and the second set I called x1 prime to xv prime, I called vinegar polynomials, vinegar variables. Sorry, any polynomial in this shape, I call it an oil vinegar polynomial. Okay, if you look at it, this quadratic polynomial, you should realize that the xi term, xi, xj terms are missing, which means, you see, oil meets vinegar, vinegar meets vinegar, but oil never what? There's no oil-oil term. Okay? So suppose you build a map from k to the o plus v to k to the o using o vinegar polynomial. This map is easy to invert because you can what? You can guess the value of vinegar variables. What you get is what? Is a linear equation, and you can solve the linear equation. And that implies that this map is easy to invert. Again, I would emphasize, by invert, I mean what? Given an image, I can find a pre-image easily. Yeah? So this is the signature. So he designed a signature scheme based on this oil-vinegar polynomials. Okay? And of course, the rest is easy. Again, if you have an oil-vinegar map, what do? You try to hide it by compose what? By compose a linear map at the end. And then you can mix what? You can mix the variables. Okay? So this is the oil-vinegar scheme. Yep. And for the case of oil-vinegar scheme, there are two different families. One is the case O equal to V, and this was broken by Kimmich-Shamir. And another case was unbalanced case, which is V bigger than O. And for the V bigger than O, the security more or less relies on this term, Q to the V minus O. Maybe I should write plus one. So that's the what we know about the security of the oil-vinegar scheme. So we can, given a Q, for example, if Q to the 8, 2 to the 8, you can easily design a system. Okay? Here, I would like to mention quickly the basic method of attacking the balance case. Okay? The balance case, what Kiplinger-Shamir did is that they transformed the problem searching for the secret key into a problem of finding a common invariant subspace of a set of matrices. That's what they did. Okay? And they found a way to solve it very efficiently. So for the case of a balanced oil-vinegar polynomials. Okay. So later they developed several further generations. Here I would like to mention something called HFEEV. What is HFEEV? HFEEV is a combination of the two methods, HFE and oil-vinegar. So what they did is, given HFE, you add some external variables and then mix them in the form of oil-vinegar. Okay? And this system is called HFEEV. And then they developed further, sorry, it has a typo here, HFEV minus, should be HFEV minus, which is called a quartz. Quartz is a signature scheme such that the signature is actually only 81 bits, which means it's designed for short signature. Okay, this was also accepted by NESI as one of the candidates for short signature, if you want a very short signature. Okay, however, I would emphasize here the computation of finding a signature is not very efficient. It takes a few minutes to do that. Okay, and from all this previous quadratic done part one, maybe I should emphasize what Johannes said yesterday. I mean, you can see we are relatively successful in building signature schemes, and it's much harder to build what? Encryption. Encryption is much harder. Okay, so the same case occurs here. And again, I would like to say that all this previous work was mainly done by Pataran and his group. This is okay. So then I would like to mention a little bit about what we have done a little bit. So Matsumoto Imai is broken, and we want to find some other way to improve it, to make into again encryption scheme. So we proposed in 2004, in DKC 2004, a method called internal perturbation. The idea is very simple. It's a very physical idea, right? What does it mean by perturbation? Perturbation in the physical term is you have a system, you add a small change or small noise, and then you see how the system change, but you don't want the noise to be too big because you still want to keep the original structure. So our construction is the same idea, namely, I would like to add some small-scale noise to the system, okay, to make it more secure. But I have no intention to change what the fundamental structure of the system, okay? Okay, that's the basic idea, okay? So the first application we did is to the case of mass model in mind. Let's assume I use a finite field of size 2. Okay? And because we are working in a discrete world, yes? And unlike the physical system, you have a scale. Here, we are working on a finite field. I mean, what do you mean by something small? Okay? So what we did is we want to use a subspace of a small dimension. That's the basic idea. Namely, I choose a small integer r, yes? And then I randomly choose a set of linear functions I call z1 to zr. Okay? I call them perturbation agent. Okay? Of course, I would like them to be linearly independent, the linear part. Okay? And then if you put them together, this is a map from kn to kr. Okay? We have a set of functions like that. Then, what I would like to do is, suppose the left-hand side is the mass model in my system. And what I would like to do is, I would like to use this small set of linear equation to produce some extra quadratic functions, which I call, again, f1 to fn, small f1 to fn. And then I just physically put the system together. Okay? So on left-hand side is the main system. On the right-hand side is the noise. Okay? I physically put them together. And that's it. That's the basic idea. Okay? Yeah, that's the internal perturbation idea. Okay? And so this is just internal formula. That's what we do. You have this noise, and we add to the system. And here, I would like to emphasize this f1 to fn, small f1 to fn, are randomly chosen quadratic polynomials coming from of z1 to zr. And then, from the point of noise, you can see that the size of noise is not too big. Okay, the size of noise can be described by this called a perturbation set. These are lambda and mu's. Lambda is the point that belongs to this map f, which means a noise map. Okay? And P is the perturbation set. And we know the perturbation set statistically should have Q to the R element. Yeah? Because, I mean, I have only R variables here. R equations here. Yeah? So I call this F double tutor, the perturbation F tutor, and I call this small number R, the perturbation dimension. Yeah? The pub key is as usual. The encryption is as usual. And the private key, of course, consists of also the noise you added in. Because you need to denoise it in the end to decrypt, okay? And so the rest of the setting is exactly the same as the mass model images. Now I would like to talk a little bit about decryption. So the decryption is the same idea. You want to invert the map one by one, okay? The five maps one by one, and of course first you invert L1, there's no problem, and then in the second step you want to invert the map. Then you have a problem in the sense that you need to go through a search process where you pick the elements from the perturbation center one by one. Okay? So therefore, this system is a little bit slower in the sense that you have to go a search through this process. Yes? And of course, there's also possible this is not very possible. It's very likely this map is not invertible anymore, which means in the end, you will have several candidates for your plain text. And this problem in general is not a problem in the sense that we can use hash or use plus method to find out which one is the real one. So the emphasis here is that in the decryption process, you need to do a search, and the search size is exactly given by the size of the noise. Okay. So this system I call the PMI, perturbed mass model in my crypto system. Okay. And the first question, of course, is the security of this system. You will ask me what happened to the attacks before, and we did some experiment. We found out that all those previous known methods, including global basis, they cannot efficiently attack the PMI system. Namely, this small noise actually prevents the algebraic type of attacks, in particular the linearization equation and the F4, F5, or the Excel algorithm. Okay, so we were pretty confident about it. But however, later in Eurocrypt 2005, and Pierre Alain Fouque, Jackson and Louis Blanc, they found something very interesting. This is a new tech called differential attack. And the idea is very simple. They want to denoise it. Okay? What they did is, given this quadratic map, F bar, and they define this differential, and this is more, in mathematics, more precise, is a difference. Okay? So they calculate this difference. And this difference, if V is fixed as a constant, then this is a linear function in X. OK? Okay? So, and then what happened is that they found out that if you denote this capital K to be the noise kernel, which means the kernel of this map, the kernel of this map Z composed by L2, and it can be shown that if you have any element in the kernel, then this differential, which means this set of equations, the dimension is fixed. The dimension is exactly given by what? The GCD of set under M. And if V is not in the noise kernel, then the dimension changes. Okay? The dimension changes. So they have a so namely, given the element, if it's in the kernel or not in the kernel, they have a very distinctive statistical behavior in terms of dimension of this difference. Okay? And because of that, they actually managed to denoise it, which means they managed to find the perturbation and take it out. Okay? And then, of course, then the system becomes useless, because then the system becomes attacked on the multimodal MIE system, then it's totally useless. Okay? So that's what we did. And then we further did some work, which means we'd like to know, is it possible to find some way to resist this differential attack? Okay? From a very intuitive point of view, what the differential attack did is that they realized the multimodal MIE system is very pure. Namely, for the multimodal MIE system, if you calculate the differential and if you find the dimension of this equation, they are constant. Okay, normal, for a random system, it's never the case. Okay? And so, which means, from the cryptology point of view, which means, if you give me a set of polynomials which are coming from multimodal in my system, and if you give me something is random, I can tell it easily. What I do is I calculate the difference. And if it's multimodal in my, this set of equations has a constant dimension. And if it's a random system, then the dimension changes. Okay? So which means it's very easy to tell the difference between a set of polynomials coming from a multimodal MIE system, or a set of polynomials coming from a random system. Okay. So our idea is very simple. I mean, how do I prevent this to happen? Okay. So which means I want my system to behave more or less like a random system in terms of the kernel of the difference. Okay. That's what we want to do. And then my suggestion is very simple. We want to add another kind of noise to mix these two noise together such that they cannot tell the difference. Okay? And this method is basically plus. Okay? Which means, so suppose I have a PMI, then I add a few more randomly chosen quadratic polynomials. And then I mix them into the system. Okay? And that's it. That's a very simple idea. And after they do that, we can see that the differential analysis doesn't work anymore. Okay? And the critical question in what we did is adding is good. So the more you add, actually, the less effective the differential attack. But we know you don't want to add too much, because if you give people too many, so from the point of view of attack on a global basis, you have too many equations, then it can be easily solved. So we want to add as many as possible, but we want still the system to be secure. So this is we did a careful analysis. And we can show that for practical examples, for example, and if you want to add equations such that the system of the security level at a 2 to the 80s, what you need to do is to add exactly the number of GCD of n theta plus 10. And so you can see if the GCD of n theta is equal to 1, what do? You add 11. Okay? And in this case, as far as we know, all the known attacks is of the complexity at least 2 to the 80s. Okay? On the other hand, we should know that those plus polynomials are also very useful in the sense that in the decrease process, as I said, I might have multiple candidates in the end for the plain text. And those extra polynomials can be used to differentiate which one is the real plain text. So this plus actually serves two purposes. The plus polynomials, one is to, of course, help us to resist the differential attack, and the second one is to make the map more or less invertible. So that's, and the new system is called PMI plus. Okay. And for practical purpose, for example, for practical applications, we suggest that you should choose n bigger than 95, and you choose r should be equal to 6. Okay? And there's a research group in Taiwan led by Chen and Yang. They actually implemented the system, and they show that this system actually at least 10 times faster than the ISA 124 bits in the decryption process. Okay? So that's what they did. This is a PMI plus. And then I want to mention a little bit further related work, and the internal perturbation method also is applied to the hidden field equation, HFE. And from this case, you can see that the HFEV can be viewed in a different light, which means HFE in some sense is an external perturbation, which means you introduce actual variables. And so they have very common features in some way. Okay. And this internal perturbation HFE actually it can be much faster than HFE, and we know also it has a good resistance to differential attacks. Okay, and actually a few days ago I received a new paper, and this internal perturbation method was also used by Shaban and Dotax and Bringer. What they did is they used the internal perturbation method to repair a multivariate traitor tracing scheme developed by Henry Gilbert. So I have to say I haven't read the paper carefully yet, but this is definitely very interesting work. So the remark I would like to add is that it seems that internal perturbation is not the best in general. Is a pretty good method in general to improve the security without sacrificing too much the efficiency of the system. So this is what we have done. And then lastly, I want to mention something called TTM. TTM is another family of the multivariate control system, and the TTM stands for time transformation method, and this method of course is invented by T.T. Moore at Purdue. Okay, and Professor Moore is an expert in Jacobi conjecture. I assume most people know Jacobi conjecture, right? Jacobi conjecture is the following statement. So we know if you have a map from Rn to N, polynomial map, and if it's invertible, we know the determinant of the Jacobian has to be a constant. And the Jacobian actually asks the converse question. Is it true that all the polynomial isomorphisms are, if given a map, if the Jacobian is a constant, is it true it is invertible? Okay, that's the Jacobian conjecture. And then if you think in terms of a invertible maps of a polynomial ring, what we know now basically are two types of maps, which are called time maps. The first one is linear maps. Yeah, linear maps is invertible. If you have a matrix, if it's invertible. And the second type is this type, are called triangular maps. This map is definitely invertible. So what does this map do is you map x1 to xn to x1, which means the first component doesn't change, and second component is x2 plus g1 x1. Here g1 x1 is just any polynomial of a variable x1. And then third one is x3 plus what a polynomial from the previous two what variables. So it has a distinctive triangular structure. And to invert it is easy, right? So if you know the value here, how to invert x, invert it? You know x1. From x1, you plug in what? You take out g1, x1, you figure out x2. And then you what? You know x1, x2, then what? You calculate value g2, x1, x2, and you subtract it, you get x3, and so on. You have a very efficient iteration process to what? To invert it. Okay? So this is another invertible isomorphism. So if you have isomorphism of polynomial ring, if you compose them, of course they are still what? Invertible. So the family coming from the composition of a triangular map or linear map, this is called time transformation. And then we know if you can prove all the transformations are coming from time transformation, then what? You can prove Jacobi conjecture. In terms of algebraic geometry, and those, if you can find some, those who are in the isomorphism polynomials who are not tame are called wild. Okay, and there's a very famous problem called the Lacan problem, and this is a map designed by there's a map designed by Nagata in 1960s. This is a map of three variables, degree three. He wants to know if this map is tame or not. And this is another interesting story. In 2004. In the Proceedings of Natural Academic Science, there was an article claiming they solved this problem. The claim is they prove this map is wild. Okay, but Professor Moore has different opinion about this, so I don't know. I haven't been able to complete and understand the proof, so I want to wait a little bit more to and see what's going on. But the problem is, I want to say that the basic idea of this TTM coming from, in some sense, coming from a Jacobi conjecture, coming from algebraic geometry. Yeah? And of course, the first initial attempt is to what? Just use this map to build a crypto system. And that's a very bad idea. Yeah? And this is actually was used by the early works by Shamir and by Diffie Fail. This is basically the idea. But this system is not good in the sense that you have this weakness here, X1 here. You cannot hide it. You do change your variables, whatever you do, it's there. The linear term, you cannot hide it, because you can do linear combination to recover the linear term easily. So this system can be easily broken. So what is the most idea? Most idea is very simple, okay? So he asked the following question. Is it possible I can build a new system, which is a composition of four maps? So L1, L2, again, are fine linear maps. And here, T1, T2 are two triangular maps. Such that T1 is up triangular and T2 is lower triangular in the general term. And afterwards, maybe it's possible I can build a map which is completely non-linear. Right? That's it. That's his idea. And to invert this is easy, right? You should realize that because L1 is easily invertible, T2 is invertible, so this is easy. Okay? And the subtlety coming from the degree 2 requirement. So visually, you can do anything you like, right? You can write a T1, write a T2, recompose it. You get a non-linear map. That's it. We can do that. But remember, we want the map to be quadratic. Because if you have an up triangle, lower triangle map, if you compose it, just run into one, then the degree will be very high. Okay? So all his efforts was developed to use some combinatorial tricks to make sure that if I compose this two, I'll get a quadratic. Okay? He had many designs, but by now, all those designs are somehow has some weaknesses, in the sense that those polynomials, this formulas he invented, and somehow always has some hidden catches. So by now, all the systems are broken. But nevertheless, I think this idea is a very elegant idea from a mathematical point of view. So the fundamental question is it possible I can compose two triangular maps to get a generic quadratic map? And nobody knows that. Okay? So this is the TTM method. Yeah? And then I want to mention a little bit more about what's been done recently. And the further, in terms of signature, there's a new system proposed by my research group and also people in Taiwan called TTS. TTS stands for Time Transforming Signature, and also they are called TRMC, which stands for Transformable Rational Maps. And those are all four signature schemes. And the fundamental idea is it is a multi-layer oil vinegar construction. Okay, I don't want to put too much detail as it. And there's also further work done by research group in Taiwan. They build something called the middle field equation. And this is very similar to the Masmati idea. Originally, you use one bigger field, but now you don't use one bigger field. Rather than you use some middle-sized fields, several of them, and try to build a system. But this one is not very successful at this stage either. Okay. Also, I want to mention a little bit. We recently developed a new algorithm solving polynomial equations of a finite field. The idea is very simple. We change the problem of solving a multivariate equation into solving a single variable equation and trying to solve it over the large field. So this is what we have done. And so more or less what I took earlier is what is now known in multivariate public cryptography. And I want to mention a little bit more about the challenges we have. Okay? So you can see the nice construction is here. We will always use some kind of mathematical structures we know before, the Masmoto Imai system, the TTM system. And one of the critical questions I would like to ask is it possible TTM can work? Or you can prove TTM can never work? And I have no idea how to do this. Okay? What I feel is that in terms of construction point of view, there are probably a lot of algebraic structures in mathematics we never explored that could be used here. And I don't know the answer for this. And if you can find, as I said, if you can find any quadratic maps you can invert easily, maybe you should try and give a shot at building a multivariate crypto system. So, my belief is that such a thing must have some new algebraic structure we didn't use before. So this is about construction. And now, there's an even more interesting thing is the general attack. As I mentioned earlier, in general, attack on multivariate cryptosystem is solving a set of polynomial equations. And we have this method, F global basis, F4, F5, XL, joins, etc. And we know very little about the complexity of those algorithms. Of course, for F4, F5, Fourier and his research group have some results about something called semi-regular sequence and regular sequence, but those systems are very generic systems which are not in some sense relevant. And as I mentioned earlier, HFE. For example, we know HFE can be solved by F4, F5. Okay? And you should remember, in the case of HFE, you do a random initial transformation of L1, L2 at the end. So in terms of the general theory of global basis, if you do a base change, in general, the global basis algorithm should not work. But somehow, in the case of HFE, you do change the basis. You cannot hide what is in your structure. And we do not know why it's the case. Okay? So a lot of work needs to be done in this case. Namely, we should understand better, or we should understand more about how to solve polynomial equations. Okay? Of course, last two things I want to mention. The first one, applications. As Johannes said yesterday, we do the research not just to write the grant applications. We want to use it. Yes? So one of the focus we have is to hopefully to use this, because in the case of a TTS and Rainbow system, they are very efficient in signing, very fast. Okay? They can be up to 100 times faster than ISA. Okay? So one of the hope is we can somehow implement it on a passive FID, namely RFID without power. Okay? And there's a research group in Taiwan doing that at this moment. We're working together on this as well. And the last problem is approved security. Okay? If you know a little bit more about this field, you realize there are various different attack methods on the system. And how can you build some confidence on such a thing? And of course, if you can do anything about proof of safety, that'd be great. So here I would like to mention another problem. It's mean rank problem. Okay? Often in the attack, we use this in the attack, it comes to solving a problem of mean rank problem. What is mean rank problem? Mean rank is a very simple problem. So you have a set of matrices. You want to do linear combinations such as to make the rank lowest, and how to do that. And we know very little about how to do that. Okay, let me repeat. The mean rank problem is you have a set of matrices. Yeah? For example, the simple problem is you have an n by n matrix which are all invertible. And you want to do linear combination such that this matrix become degenerate. And how to find that? And this is actually an NP-complete problem. Okay? So there's a lot of problems related to this. So I think if you want to do anything, you have to understand this problem better. But at this stage, very, very little is known about this. Okay? So maybe at the end, bear me, I can myself. So I like to do a commercial at the end. So recently, with my colleagues, we wrote a book called Multivariate Public Key Cryptosystems, and it's published by Springer. And if you're interested in, and this is actually a good place for an introduction about this subject. And this is the end of my talk. Thank you.